from KQED.
Good morning. I'm Penny Nelson, and this is the California Report. In a major win for Governor Jerry Brown and state Democrats, California lawmakers approved a $52 billion transportation infrastructure plan yesterday. The money is slated for road, bridge, and highway repairs, as well as various transit projects. And because the bill involves raising taxes, it required a yes vote from two-thirds of both the Assembly and the state Senate. As KQED politics and government reporter Katie Orr tells us, the razor-close vote demonstrated the ongoing political clout of Governor Brown.
The plan raises the gas tax by 12 cents a gallon and adds additional vehicle registration fees, making for a politically tricky vote. Early yesterday, it was unclear whether Democrats had all the support they needed. Brown and legislative leaders began working on wobbly lawmakers, allocating more than $800 million in pet projects for some districts. The politicking appeared to work. The measure secured the needed 27 votes in the Senate and 54 in the Assembly. Afterward, Brown said he was proud of the Democratic Party for doing something that will help Californians.
I remember back the Harry Truman election. They talked about the Republican as a do-nothing. And Harry Truman around gave him hell. All over America, we're going to build things. Well, tonight we're building things. That's common sense. That's the spirit of Harry Truman. That's the spirit of the Democratic Party. Proud to be a part of it.
Republicans such as Senator Jeff Stone generally opposed the measure, saying the increased gas tax would hurt those who could least afford it.
I have senior citizens that have to choose between drugs and gasoline or food in a state where we have one in four children that go to bed hungry every single night.
Lawmakers also passed a constitutional amendment they say restricts the bill's revenue to transportation spending. That measure must go before voters in 2018. For the California Report, I'm Katie Orr in Sacramento.
So the passage of the transportation bill is not the only reason Governor Brown is celebrating this morning. For one, it's the governor's birthday. He turns 79 today, and he got more good news Thursday when a state appeals court ruled to uphold California's cap-and-trade program. The program is crucial to the governor's effort to fight climate change. It caps carbon emissions and makes companies buy permits to release greenhouse gases. Deborah Kahn, a reporter with Environment and Energy Publishing, calls the decision significant.
This case has been out there for a long time. People have been waiting to see what would happen to the program, whether it be legal or not. And so now that we have this decision that says it is legal, companies that have to buy allowances will probably be a little more eager to get back into the market and buy allowances.
The California Chamber of Commerce brought the case in 2012, arguing it is essentially a tax that never received the required two-thirds approval. The chamber said in a statement it's evaluating its legal options. Well, last November, California voters defeated a ballot proposal that would have given state government more control over drug prices. It was a victory for pharmaceutical companies. Now they're fighting new efforts by state lawmakers to control the industry. KQED health editor Carrie Feibel reports from Sacramento.
A new bill has a different approach. Instead of direct price controls, it aims for price transparency. Drug companies would have to announce big price hikes and detail why the prices are going up. Democrat Jim Wood chairs the Assembly Health Committee and says SB 17 looks like a good first step.
I'm a big believer in transparency. If you can't understand what's going on, how could you possibly make efforts to change that?
Drug makers frequently say drug prices are high because the scientific research involved is itself expensive. But Wood says we can't take their word on it.
I would personally love to know how much they spend on advertising and marketing.
Drug industry representatives and researchers visited the Capitol this week, promoting their contributions to the California economy and to lobby against the bill. Priscilla Vanderveer is a spokeswoman with Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America. She says this bill won't do anything to help consumers.
So if the problem is that patients are having a hard time affording their medicines, which we know they are, then let's come to the table and talk about solutions that can actually help them.
She says the bill also ignores other parts of the supply chain that affect prices.
You've also got pharmacy benefit managers and insurers who negotiate the price significantly down, I might say. And then you've also got wholesalers and you've got pharmacies.
On one of those points, Assemblyman Wood actually agrees with her. He's introduced a bill in the Assembly focused on pharmacy benefit managers, the middlemen between drug manufacturers and health plans. It would require them to disclose information about their business practices as well. For the California Report, I'm Carrie Feibel.
Let's go now to the Oroville Dam, where state engineers say they're pulling out all the stops to avoid a repeat of February's crisis. KQED science editor Craig Miller says officials have rolled out their fast-track plan to replace two spillways that crumbled during winter storms, causing mass evacuations along the Feather River.
That's the sound of water roaring down Oroville's crippled concrete spillway at more than 100,000 cubic feet per second in February. That giant concrete chute is now shut down, and engineers say fully replacing it will be a two-year project. Once completed, the new spillway will be able to carry nearly twice the flows of the 50-year-old structure. But Jeannie Cuddle, engineering chief for the Department of Water Resources, says the emergency spillway, where erosion prompted mass evacuations, is also getting a makeover, just in case.
Our intent is not to have to use the emergency spillway ever again. However, we know that Mother Nature throws a lot at us, so we're going to be ready.
Cuddle says that'll mean the old earthen spillway will get a new buttress at the lip, plus retaining walls and concrete channels down below. Accountants are still sorting out what all this will cost taxpayers, but the tab will certainly run to the hundreds of millions. For the California Report, I'm Craig Miller.
Well, it's looking like another bleak season ahead for the Northern California salmon, including around the Klamath River near the Oregon border. Federal fishery managers are meeting in Sacramento to set quotas on the season's catch. Commercial boats and tribal interests along the Klamath say limits on the catch will be devastating. Reporter Molly Peterson has more.
A couple years back, drought dried up river flows and a deadly parasite infected up to 90% of juvenile salmon in the Klamath River. Predictions now are for a record low spawning year. Two tribes, the Yurok and the Hoopa, together expect no more than 800 fish allocated among thousands of members living along the river. Yurok lawyer and tribal member Amy Cordalis says fish and fishing culture sustain her tribe.
That great sense of gathering around the fish, around the salmon run, will not be there. And for us, what that means is our very social fabric is falling apart.
Commercial salmon fishing along the coast near the Klamath River is likely to shut down entirely. Noah Oppenheim with the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations says that spells economic ripple effects in North Coast ports.
That means fishermen are going to be selling their boats. It means they're going to be defaulting on loans. We need to solve this problem.
Tribes and fishermen are seeking disaster relief from the state and from the federal government. Some solutions are underway. Heavy rains helped send pulses of water down the river this spring to control the fish parasite. And the biggest change could come in 3 years. The owner of four hydroelectric dams on the Klamath has applied to remove them by 2020, which may improve the river's flow year-round, nurturing future salmon runs. Fish advocates say they're hopeful because that plan is still on track. For the California Report, I'm Molly Peterson.
Well, we all know the Southern California real estate market is hot right now, but one area that's been very popular may surprise you. That's Porter Ranch. It's barely been a year and a half since a ruptured natural gas well there in Aliso Canyon storage field caused the nation's worst ever natural gas leak. But as KPCC's Ben Bergman reports, home buyers seem to be shrugging off the leak, especially those in the market for high-end properties.
I'm outside a model home at a luxury planned community called Westcliff at Porter Ranch. There are fountains in the front yard and in the back next to the pool behind this 5,200 square foot manor. This home goes for $1.5 million, but with extras like pools and landscaping, it can easily be $2 million, a price never seen before this year in Porter Ranch. That's even though the development sits about a mile from the gas leak. The strength of the market has surprised even Toll Brothers executives, who plan to build more than 1,400 homes in these hills overlooking the San Fernando Valley over the coming years. The company bragged to investors last year it didn't have to offer discounts after the leak. Longtime Porter Ranch real estate agent Ken Sampson says these days he rarely gets questions about the well.
Maybe one out of every 15 asked today. A year ago, it was on everybody's mind.
He says the whole thing has quickly been forgotten.
I believe that as a whole, the public in general doesn't really pay attention to it, to be honest with you.
Except for people like Lori Kerrigan, who says her family is still getting sick long after the leak was capped.
People that actually have experienced the grief and the doctor's appointments and the constant nosebleeds and rashes, they're not willing to go buy another house in Port Aransas. They're willing to get as far away as possible.
A couple weeks ago, Kerrigan moved her three dogs and six kids to a house farther away from the gas field. She's not selling her old house yet because prices to Aliso Canyon have been slower to recover. Kerrigan says a number of her neighbors who want to sell have had the same problem. And she should know because she's a realtor. She doesn't want other people to go through what she has. So recently she found herself in the strange position of steering a client away from buying in the Toll Brothers development.
I told him, you know, don't buy until you know for sure. You have two small kids. Don't do it.
Was it tough to convince them?
Yes.
Kerrigan says it's tough to convince clients to stay away because they're getting the impression from Toll Brothers that everything is fixed.
If it's fixed, you assume it's okay. Not that we don't know what caused the blowout, and there are issues with the construction and how old it is. There are still elevated spikes.
Toll Brothers' Frank Sue acknowledges he still has concerns about the safety of the storage field. So what do his agents tell prospective buyers?
We tell them that the leak has been capped. The facility's been there for 50-plus years. It's probably the most regulated facility in the entire country. We feel like it's going to be very safe in the future. And most of our buyers that are coming in today, that's enough for them.
Sue says he wouldn't be recommending Porter Ranch if he didn't live here happily with his family.
We were even here during the leak. I mean, my kids weren't affected. Porter Ranch is still a great place to live. It's not a horrible place.
It's also the rare place in L.A. where there are top schools, low crime rates, and the ability to customize a home from the ground up with a view. For buyers like Gabriel Barajas, those positives far outweigh any possible risks.
I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, and me growing up always wanted to have a house up in the hills, and I finally bought it.
Were you concerned at all about the gas leak?
No, I told my wife that I was going to buy this house even if I have to wear a gas mask.
And his wife, Erica Barajas, says she has no worries either.
I know that they wouldn't be building these homes if we were in danger.
This week, a California Senate committee approved an emergency bill that would keep Aliso Canyon closed until the state finishes a study to determine what caused the leak. Southern California Gas Company opposes the measure. It maintains the storage field can operate safely while the study is underway. For the California Report, I'm Ben Bergman in Porter Ranch.
Well, let's now get some of the California reaction to the United States launching missiles into Syria last night. San Diego Congresswoman Susan Davis is the highest-ranking California Democrat on the House Armed Services Committee, and she joins us now. Good morning, Congresswoman.
Good morning, Penny. Good to be with you.
Well, do you support the action that the Trump administration took last night with the airstrike on the Syrian airbase?
Yeah. Well, Penny, I'm as sickened as everyone else by the atrocities committed against the Syrian people, the men, women, and children by President Assad. So I do believe it warranted a response. But the missile attacks also warrant consultation with Congress by the Trump administration. We must move forward with that, and I think that I know my constituents want me as their representative to be engaged on this.
Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi is calling for Congress to reconvene for a vote. How would you vote?
It depends on what kind of authorization for military force we do going forward. We no longer can vote on these missile attacks, but we can tailor something that gives the president discretion as he responds, but it also keeps the Congress engaged. That really has been missing, and we have been relying, of course, on the 9/11 reauthorization.
In 2013, the Obama administration was also considering strikes on the Assad regime, and at that time, this is what you said.
It's not clear what happens down the line. I think it's very hard for it to be a limited strike.
And is it still your concern that containing this action or keeping it of a limited sort of strike is going to be a worry?
Absolutely, because the tensions in the Middle East are such that we can't expect that we don't get a response back. I think that they knew they needed to respond in this case. My concern, having been in the Congress when we went into Iraq, I did not vote for that engagement because there was no plan. once you go in, you have to know how you're going to get out. Missile strikes are different than putting our men and women on the ground. And I don't think that's being contemplated right now. But I believe that we also have to know what the goals are. What are our strategic objectives here? And so far, they have not been articulated.
You know, you're a military spouse. What are your concerns about increased engagement in Syria and how this will affect our current fight against ISIS? You have such close knowledge of how all this works.
Well, whenever we're engaging, we know that we have to do everything in our power to keep the men and women who volunteer to serve our country safe. We also have other tools besides our military tools. And what concerns me now is that we're looking at budgets that would actually cut back on our diplomatic efforts. Those are hard efforts, no question about that. But this is not the time to cut back on our diplomatic engagement either. I think we're looking to do more with the military. We're concerned about our readiness, but at the same time, we want to be sure that we have everything that we need to properly engage. There are risks out there, as we well know, risks of increasing tensions with Russia and Iran, increasing tensions in the Middle East. So this takes a very concerted and, I think, in-depth discussion on the part of the people's representatives. And I certainly hope that the president understands that.
San Diego Congresswoman Susan Davis, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Support for the California Report comes from the Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of California's children and youth at risk. Block Construction, a builder committed to enhancing communities in the Bay Area and Central Coast. BLACH.com. Block Construction, together building greatness. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.
And that's the California Report for Friday, April 7th, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our engineer is Katie McMurrin, with additional engineering from Jim Bennett, Danny Bringer, Seal Muller, and Howard Gelman. Guy Marzorati directed the show. Tina Rubio was our producer. Our editors this week included Polly Stryker, Tyke Hendricks, Scott Schaefer, and Pat Flynn. Ingrid Becker is our senior producer. Ethan Lindsay is our managing editor. And Holly Kernan is our vice president of news. I'm Penny Nelson, and have a great weekend.